Can we turn, please, to Nehemiah chapter 3? Picking up the narrative at verse 28, and I'll just read verse 28. Beyond the horse gate, the priests made repairs, each in front of his own house. And the horse gate, of course, is on the east side of the city, and not so named because apparently the horses that approached and left the old palace would have gone through that way. And again, you see here, hey, the priests were involved in the repair. And what an example they must have been to the ordinary people. I mentioned it this morning. Never ask anyone to do something you would not be prepared to do yourself. I want to tell you about a lady that we had the privilege of knowing when we were in Wandsworth. And she was, 70s? Must have been in her 70s. And she was a real servant of the Lord. Her name was Eileen. And I'll give you one example. Our church was on the High Street, and we used to get all manner of flotsam and jetsam come into the church. For all sorts of reasons. Mainly to keep warm or to get a cup of tea or something. And we had one chap come in, and he sat there, and then suddenly he was sick all over the place. He'd have a few drinks. And people started, fancy that. You know, most people would. Do you know what Eileen did? She went and got a bucket and started cleaning up the mess. Servant. What an example being a true servant of the Lord is. And so I want to move on down to verse 31. And after him, Melchizedek, one of the goldsmiths, made repairs as far as the house of the Nethinims and of the merchants in front of the Mifkad gate, as far as the upper the room. And you notice here, excuse me, the mention of goldsmiths. And I imagine that would include silversmiths and things like that as well. Now, I don't know anything about it, but if you're going to work with gold and silver, you need very delicate hands. You know, you are a craftsman. You know, they call them a goldsmith, don't they? A silversmith. And you need delicate hands to use the delicate instruments that you would use to create things which could be quite beautiful. And they didn't seem to be too worried about getting them hands dirty, did they? They could have just said, "No, this is not for us. You know, we've got this trade, and our livelihood depends on it, and you know, our hands are very delicate. And so therefore we can't get involved." But it tells us here that they did. And even in the next verse, in verse 32, and between the upper room at the corner as far as the sheep gate, the goldsmiths and the merchants made repairs. And here, of course, we come to the, if you like, the end of the circuit of the repair of the walls and the gates of Jerusalem. And indeed, they're starting, or rather ending, at the original starting point. And we can read that in verse 1, of course, that about them working there at the sheep gate. And again in 32, the sheep gate. So, there we have this team of people working simultaneously around Jerusalem as a team, rebuilding here, rebuilding there. And what a blessing, an encouragement that must have been. Now, there's one person that I think I'm right in saying is not mentioned in this chapter, that you might think to expect to see him mentioned. And that, of course, is Nehemiah. I don't think he's mentioned through the whole of chapter 3. Of course he's there. He's overseeing the work. He's, I suppose we call him the foreman. And no doubt he's going around. And he's looking at things and he's inspecting things. He's talking to people. He's encouraging people. All the time he's doing that. You see, it was his servants and other people that were actually involved in the rebuilding of the walls. And Nehemiah was there as a leader. And I don't think people would have complained that he wasn't actually getting down there and getting involved. I'm sure where he did help. I'm sure if he ever saw something a bit loose, he would put it in and do that. But see, that's not his task. And I think we have to remember that when we look at people in their ministries in the church. What is this individual being called for? I remember I went to one church for an interview when I was in the LCM. And it was a Church of England church. And the chap just gave me a whole list of what I had to do. Youth club, house group, midweek meeting, something on Thursday, I was laid Friday off. And I said, well, when do I do visiting? You know, those of us that were in the mission attached to churches were there to knock on doors and try to share the gospel with people and so on and so forth. And it's so easy, isn't it? To, you know, if we were blessed, if the Lord gave us a pastor, wouldn't it be nice? I'd love to be. I'd say, it's all yours, mate. I'm finished now. I can put my feet up now. But we couldn't do that, could we? Because he ain't Superman. And he never will be. There's no such thing as super pastor. He would need help. And encouragement. And if he's got a family, they would need help and encouragement. But then to remember that he is in control. And there may be things that he is unable to get involved with. Where we do, and so on. And what I'm sure Nehemiah was, you read this and you pick this up much later on in the book. He was an encourager. I'm sure he didn't go around saying, you know, that wall's not very good. You need to rebuild that. And you need to put your back into it a bit. Or anything like that. He went round and he encouraged. And what a blessing the ministry of encouragement is. You know, you can kill off someone by being a discourager. Just being someone that takes it all for granted. You don't have to do anything or say, just do nothing. How discouraging it is. But on the other hand, how greatly encouraging it is. When I was at Trinity Road, we had a thing that went on once a month on Wednesday afternoons. They had a women's meeting every Wednesday afternoon called Women's Own. But on the on one Wednesday a month, they changed it to what they called Luncheon Plus. And basically, we used to borrow the Wandsworth Community Transport bus, and we'd go and pick a load of people up, and others would come in. People would come in who were a part of the church, people would come in from other churches, people would come in from no church. And basically they would have a meal, and it was a very good, substantial meal. And then they would they'd have a sort of what they call a light talk, like a film from the RSPB or something like that. And then they'd have a preach, someone would stand up and preach the word of God. And it was a wonderful halfway house to invite people to. And we could get sometimes up to 80 or 90 people at these dues. It was a lot of hard work, I must say, for the people that were preparing the food, to, you know, getting out to get the people in on the transport and all sorts of things. But
I remember once when they were all sat there eating away, Ken Patterson, who was our pastor, and he was a wonderful man, he came and he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, "You must be so encouraged by looking at this. Because so many of these people are coming off invites from the doors." But that was his he was a tremendous encourager. And the Lord blessed his ministry in many, many ways. But he had that ministry of encouragement. And, you know, and you think these people that are building the wall. Now, some of them may be quite good at building. But let's just suppose there's a ceiling out in the back, you know, that needs repairing. I don't know if you know, there is. It collapsed. Would you fancy joining us to put it all back together? To put up the plasterboard? To put the screen on? And maybe the bit of Airtex at the end? Airtex, I mean, at the end? Well, I wouldn't fancy doing it. Thankfully, I don't have to worry because someone's going to do it for us. You know, people have got these skills and they use them. And as Nehemiah went round and saw people building, and of course, remember, as I was saying, not all of them were what I call builders. The women who were working in the perfumeries. I don't think they got much bricklaying experience there. The goldsmiths, the priests, and so on. And yet they were mucking in. And I was just thinking about our situation. I'm so glad we got somebody who's prepared to do it for us. Because years ago I tried it, putting up plasterboard, when I was a lot younger, and it was difficult then. Now it'd be almost impossible. You know, there's Nehemiah. He's got a lot on his mind, remember. It's not just a rebuild of the wall. He's got the problem. We discover this in the next chapter when Sanballat gets to hear about what's going on and Tobiah and the Ammonite and all that lot. And they carry on with their opposition to him. But these men, these women that were rebuilding the walls there at Jerusalem, looked upon Nehemiah as a source of enabling and a source of encouragement. And how I would always pray that could be so true for me. That people would see me as an encourager rather than a discourager. Someone would see us as someone who you can enable something to happen without interfering. Oh, if that could just be so true. True for me, perhaps true for us, I don't know. Now you do remember this, while the rebuilding was going on, Nehemiah would also have been very busy and alert to keep an eye on the activities of the enemy. It tells us there, I won't go into it too deep, but it tells us there in chapter 4 and verse 1, when Sanballat heard what we were rebuilding, he was furious. Well, furious is a very, very strong word, but we'll look at that at another time. And then we read Tobiah in verse 3, Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him. Whatever they build, even a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall. In other words, he didn't think much of their building progress. And so it goes on. And it tells us there, then in verse 7, when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites and the Ashdodites, it's quite a collection of enemies, isn't it? There's not one person he's dealing with. It tells us there, heard that the walls of Jerusalem were being restored and the gaps were beginning to be closed. What does it say? They become very angry. Furious and very angry. And all of them conspire to come back and attack Jerusalem and create confusion. You know, when we preach the gospel, truly, we make people angry. People get very uptight of being called sinners. And if you begin to name certain sins, they get even more uptight. And some of them get very, very angry, and one only has to read the Christian newspapers to see how some of them have ended up in court, or they've lost their jobs. And it's not just, of course, happening in this country, it's happening in many other places as well. But he needs to keep an eye, and so do we. We need to keep our eye on the enemy. You know, we could easily go to sleep in here and be at ease at Zion. We're a comfy little group. You know, we come here every Sunday and every Thursday. We have a Bible study. We have a, sing a few hymns. We do this, we do that, and we go home again. It's very comfortable. No threat. No one bothers us. But one day someone might. Someone might one day come in and really take us on what we believe. And it's not very pleasant, I can assure you. But, so as I was saying at the beginning, and just to say again, as far as we know, and of course we can't, it's very difficult to argue from silence, that Nehemiah didn't get involved with a lot of the labouring work. Now, I don't know... years ago, there was these great big liners used to come into places like Southampton and Liverpool and places like that. And then, you know, you'd get the tugs, would push them in, and then they'd finally get near the berth, and then and all the ropes would come. But when it was time for them to leave the port and go off on their cruise, I imagine it might still be the same today, I don't know, they need a pilot. Someone that knows what he or she possibly is doing to guide that ship away from the edge of the berth to perhaps turn it round and guide it into, if you like, deep water. Now that pilot is not there to haul on the ropes. You don't expect him to sort of join in and say, hang on a mate, I just... There's people there doing that. They're undoing the things and they... throw about, I suppose these days it's all done electrically, but anyway, he's not there, is he, to do that? He's there because he has a specialised ministry to guide that ship out of the harbour and into water where it can then go on its own steam or whatever it goes on. But you see, Nehemiah was needed to be instantly available. And that's a hard thing, you know. When was the last time that you were rung in the middle of the night for someone wanting help? It shatters your night's sleep. We've had it a few times in London. And you have to respond. You can't say, well, I'm going back to sleep now. You know, instantly available, but not taken for granted, of course. You know, are we available? Perhaps for an emergency in the week, or whatever it may be. And because Nehemiah had to be instantly available, that's probably why he couldn't be tied up in repair work. And each of us in this little fellowship here have all got our different gifts. Our abilities, our talents, whatever you would like to describe them as. And the Lord has gifted us to them, to us. And he expects us to use them. Now some are different to others. Some are enabling gifts. We read earlier, didn't we, about the body. You know, that you don't get one bit better than the other. I suppose everyone would think the brain's the best thing to be. Because that controls most things. But according to Paul, everything is essential. And it's the same with a church fellowship. Everyone is essential, especially those who are in membership. It's their duty to be here when they can, not to be elsewhere. That's one of the things of being a member. And those who are not, the tasks that the Lord would give us to do. They all help, don't they? When it doesn't get done, it means either someone else has to do it or it don't get done at all. So, let me encourage you. Let me encourage myself to be available. To be available for what the Lord would have us do. As a fellowship and as individuals. And I'm reminded again of I don't remember, just quickly back to verse 5 when we had the Tekoites made repairs, but their nobles did not put their shoulders to the work of the Lord. Well, what do we find in verse 27? After them, the Tekoites repaired another section. They could easily have said, we've done our bit, feet up, tea time, a bit like digging the road. But no, they finished their bit and they went on to further another section. It tells us there, next to the great projecting tower and as far as the wall of Ophel. They must have been some really brilliant men, those men of Tekoa, mustn't they? Sort of people a church could do with. A group of men like that, a church would grow and thrive. So may we have that attitude. The attitude that Nehemiah had, and particularly these Tekoites. And may we look to the Lord for all that we need in these days. Let's just pray together, shall we?